Continental Media 0508 is on the air. COM is about media around the American continent, not especially shortwave, a monthly supplement to my weekly program, World of Radio. I'm Glenn Hauser. COM is made possible by Universal Radio, www.universal-radio.com. Check out their new catalog on request from 1-800-431-3939 or via their website, which you may also reach via www.dxing.com, Universal Radio for quality amateur and shortwave equipment. As of late August, the CBC lockout of 5,500 of its non-management employees had been going on for over 2 weeks with no resolution in sight. A great deal has been written about this, but here's something by an Ontarian, Winston Sini, who had these comments about the CBC versus the CTV. The CBC brings to the Canadian broadcast milieu a distinctiveness which CTV has failed to fill. Because it's cheaper in many cases to purchase out-of-country TV programs, CTV has made a practice throughout its existence of plugging as much of its key viewing times with programs they are unable to produce or unable to afford to produce. CTV boasts of its news being the most viewed in Canada. That may be, but I can say that CTV does not have foreign correspondents, and I find their news internationally lean and lacking in coverage and film footage. I have no memory of any significant artistic, educational, or cultural programming ever produced by the CTV network. That doesn't mean they haven't done so. I just have no imprinted memory of such. In this sense, CTV is a lightweight in interpreting Canadian culture and Canadian history. The CBC has done an amazing job in producing what national programs it has while operating on a budget which has been sliced by each successive government over the past 25 years. When we look at radio, CBC is a bastion of cultural value in Canada. An American writer, Bill Bryson, in his book The Lost Continent, Travels in Small-Town America, wrote of hearing that there was a major political upheaval in Washington while he was journeying across America. As he drove along, he rotated his radio dial through the evening, searching for an in-depth analysis of events. He eventually came upon a comprehensive report and settled back to listen to it. When it ended, he was stunned to discover he was listening to the CBC. Bryson was disappointed that he was unable to hear any in-depth analysis from any radio stations within his own country. CBC Radio is a Canadian lighthouse. When you drive across Canada from province to province, it's like hearing the same radio station with the same familiar voices. It gives Canada's culturally varied areas a sense of unity. We all have different needs in life. Some people's needs are filled by listening to country music or rock music or their local radio station. Others place economic values above cultural values, and still others place cultural values above economics. I guess I fit into the latter category, says Winston Sini, VE3WFS, on the Ontario DX Association Yahoo group. At his website, KimAndrewElliott.com refers us to what he calls a private and, is it, contrarian voice of America. The International Media Division of the World Security Institute, they might want to consider a snappier name, uses Russian, Chinese, and other journalists to explain America to Russia and China. It claims to reach 300 million a week in China, according to a Washington Post article of August 4th, to which we'll provide a link in the summary. He also refers us to the website of this so-called International Media Division, which is active in Russian, Chinese, Arabic, and Persian. It's www.worldsecurityinstitute.org/internationalmedia.htm with a capital I. From something rather grandiose to the smallest of radio stations, a drive-in movie theater in Illinois. Curtis Sadowski brought this to our attention on the WTFDA sound-off list. There was a story in the Belleville newspaper, Galvaman brings back the drive-in movies of his youth. This drive-in theater in Galva, Illinois, uses FM radio, low-power transmitters, to put out the audio rather than the wired speakers we may remember. And that's still being done in many other drive-in theaters, I think, the few that still exist, and there are some more coming back. Naturally, my first question was, what's the frequency, Curtis, not mentioned in the story? Since he was nearby, he actually drove to the vicinity and determined that the frequencies in use were 88.5 and 91.3. However, if there's tropospheric DX causing interference to these low-power units, they're subject to change to a clearer frequency at the moment. The drive-in theater is actually called the Harvest Moon, and they have their own website. It's rather rustic-looking, and you can find about the checkered history of the theater, www.harvestmoondrivein.com. Furthermore, there was an article in Buzz Magazine about it, and we'll have a link to that as well. Here's another unusual station, but this is a real broadcast station, somewhat higher powered. On the Radio Info Texas board, Robert Bass was asking about a station he had heard about, which broadcast two high school football games at once, an FM station, one on the left channel and one on the right. And an answer soon came up from someone calling himself Edward R. Murrow. It's KSHN Shine On 9 in Liberty, Dayton, Texas. That's east of Houston. They split their stereo channels, according to the website, when they have two games going at once, and they explain how to also pick one or the other if you're listening to their webcast by adjusting the balance in your player. It's www.kshn.com. I took a look and a listen. Despite the stupid double ball games, it seems to be a fine local service station. They even have daily radiograms available by email or online with lots of local news. On the ABDX list, Don Kasky in San Francisco talks about his favorite station streaming on the Internet, especially country and bluegrass. WSM Nashville, he had some trouble connecting with, but was currently able to. But lesser known, there's KBON in Eunice, Louisiana, with Cajun, country, and swamp pop, and the great Paul Marks as owner, operator, and announcer. Well, I'm not sure how close Eunice is to the devastated area, but let's hope they still exist. Another one he mentions is WTKM in Hartford, Wisconsin, with great country and polka shows, K-Pig, Freedom, California, Americana Galore, and the descendant of the notorious KFAT. He also likes WAMU Washington, D.C., Bluegrass 24-7 outlet, and WDVX Clinton, Tennessee, with Bluegrass, Country, Americana, Ethnic, Gospel, Rock, and whatever. He says, WSM mostly for the Grand Ole Opry, K-Bon when I'm in a Cajun mood. I love their commercials. Most of the time I listen to WDVX. It's operating from a small trailer on a hillside overlooking Knoxville, Tennessee. But they have excellent volunteer announcers and A1 programming. Now back to a very small station and a very large place. Mike Westfall and the ABDX group, who lives in Los Alamos, New Mexico, says there is a 1610 station at the south entrance to the Grand Canyon using the call sign WGCNP, as in Grand Canyon National Park. Though it seemed more like a Part 15 operation, it vanished almost immediately after getting past the entrance station. Well, I reply, shouldn't that be KGCNP? Well, it doesn't really matter since I'm sure it's a made-up call. It probably has three or four letters and three or four numbers as its real call sign. This from Greg Hardison's broadcast band update. For the first time in around 80 years, there are no radio stations in Hollywood. The last holdout was KNX 1070. The Infinity All-Newser left Columbia Square without turning out the lights in mid-August. The TV sisters, KCBS and KCAL, remain in the historic facility, pending completion of new San Fernando Valley studios next year. KNX first broadcast from the CBS facility on April 30, 1938. In subsequent years, many CBS radio network productions originated from the eight top-notch radio studios it found within. NBC, ABC, and Mutual all maintain their West Coast headquarters within a few blocks of Columbia Square over on Vine Street. The old NBC home was for many years the Hollywood branch of Home Federal Savings at the corner of Sunset and Vine. KNX now boasts state-of-the-art digital studios, packed in with co-owned newser KFWB 980 and three other Infinity stations, cold stored in a Wilshire Boulevard high-rise. No doubt the view's better, but what about the spirit of the operation? And, Greg Hardison boldly continues, how and why could and did the Disney Board of Directors get away with paying Michael Ovitz $140 million severance for 14 months of service? Why, with the help of Delaware Chancery Court Judge William Chandler? His ruling says the shareholders get the shaft of paying this ridiculous sum to Michael Eisner's partying buddy, considered a psychopath by Eisner, as stated in internal memos. If any other American corporation in any business tried this, heads would roll right into the hoosegow. Perhaps someone should look into the question, just who sold their soul to the devil in order for Disney to get away with this sort of crap? As well, how could WorldCom, Enron, or Martha Stewart be prosecuted in any good faith while Disney encounters only impunity for their egregious actions? Standard disclaimer. Another opinion from Scott Feibusch on the ABDX list. Someone made the claim that Air America and other syndicated liberal talk networks should be expected to do best in places like San Francisco and Boston and Madison. And it'd be a long time before an AA affiliate came on the air someplace like Montana. Guess what? As I was updating 100,000watts.com, there was the sign-on of KKNS 105.9 Missoula, Montana, as, yep, Progressive Talk 105.9. Here's my theory, with the exception of a very small number of old-line full-service talkers like WGN and KGO. Most talk stations these days are politically charged on one side or another. Here in Rochester, WHAM used to be the station that everyone could listen to. Today, with the exception of a pretty straightforward morning show and 2 hours of sports talk in the evening, it's a nonstop diet of conservative talk. Beck, Limbaugh, Hannity, Savage, and the local Bob Lonsbury. The move from ABC and CBS to Fox News Radio on WHAM and many of its Clear Channel sister stations is a tacit acknowledgement that the station now plays to a particular political base. There's nothing wrong with that, mind you, but it reflects a reality that the station no longer aims to be all things to all people, instead looking to draw a loyal and passionate audience from a particular subset of the community. That strategy works. WHAM is consistently the top-rated station in the market, drawing 10 to 11 shares, 12 or over, with regularity. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Look at the markets where conservative talk radio has had some of its biggest successes. And if anything, you'll find that the overall political leanings of those markets tend to be, if anything, to the left of Rochester. Two of the earliest successes with hard right talk were KSFO San Francisco, where Michael Savage originated, and KVI Seattle. And to those, we can add similarly ideological talkers like KFI Los Angeles, WABC New York, WMAL Washington, and WRKO Boston. It's my contention these stations thrive in these very blue markets precisely because they address a minority audience in a way that creates a strong feeling of identity and passion for the station. And it's my contention that a liberal talker might actually do better in a market like Omaha or Dallas, where there is a small niche of progressive listeners completely unserved and disenfranchised by the existing talk outlets, more so than in San Francisco or Boston, where there are already plenty of media outlets in every flavor from center-left, such as the high-rated NPR news stations and the daily papers, to extreme left-wing, as in Pacifica. It's much harder to build a community identity around a radio station when it echoes the mainstream dialogue of the community than it is when it's speaking to a group that considers itself outnumbered and embattled. I'll be very interested to see how stations like the one in Missoula do. I think that in the long run, their fortunes will be more telling of the format's prospects than the San Francisco or Boston or New York stations would be. So says Scott Feibusch. Speaking of Fox News taking over from the traditional centrist radio networks, Art Blair, IRCA, forwards this story from Madison.com by Dave Zweifel. Another radio station falls to Fox News. Public Radio's Garrison Keillor wrote a great piece for The Nation in which he lamented the passing of radio programming as we once knew it. He talked about the heyday of great stations like WCCO, WOR, KMOX, and WGN, and how they were filled with down-home programming on everything from fishing and home repair to baseball games and live coverage of local news. More importantly, the stations were about their hometowns. In smaller communities, you would hear the local livestock reports, the announcements of service club meetings, and a listener calling to thank everybody for helping find her lost dog. Every station had its own personality, or two, who could speak to the listeners like they were longtime close friends. Thus it was right here in Madison, not all that long ago. There were strong local personalities on the air throughout the day and into the night, not just during the morning drive time, and they were not foaming at the mouth with hate-filled political diatribe. Jim Mader, Clark Kellogg, George Papa Hambone Vukelich, P.K. Powers, and dozens of others were such familiar voices with whom listeners identified and actually considered friends. But as Keeler pointed out, the deregulation of radio was terribly tough on what he called good neighbor radio. Texas-based Clear Channel and others began gobbling up all those little money-making stations and homogenized their contents to make even more money. So Rush is on everywhere. On many of the FM stations, the same music fills the air. An iconoclast like Hambone no longer exists. This all came to mind when WIBA AM, one of the Clear Channel properties, announced that it was switching its longtime affiliation with CBS Radio News to Fox News. Manager Jeff Tyler chalked it all up to some issues with CBS credibility, as if Dan Rather had something to do with CBS Radio. The real reason is that Fox News, Tyler should check its credibility, is cheaper, and that's all that matters. So now, all Clear Channel stations in Madison except one, WXXM, which will continue with CNN, will be broadcasting Fox News. Keeler had an answer in that Nation article for why huge numbers of right-wingers appear on those chain-owned radio stations while liberals are hard to find. It's simple, he said. Republicans are in need of affirmation. They don't feel comfortable in America, and they crave listening to people who think like them. Liberals actually enjoy living in a free society. Tuning in to hear an echo is not our idea of a good time. Patrick Griffith found this in the Business Journal of August 8th. The border radio show, The Big Jukebox in the Sky, is a tribute to the outlaw radio men who in the 1930s set up megawatt, or slightly less, border blaster radio stations across the Texas-Mexico border to evade U.S. regulations. The stations pioneered the American infomercial, selling every bizarre product known to man, and even attracted future radio giant Wolfman Jack in the 1960s. Listeners could be found as far away as South America and Japan. The Border Radio Show will kick off September 17th at Austin's Paramount Theater with help from the National Endowment for the Arts. This is a stage production, but the article says it'll be recorded for later rebroadcast on public radio. Apparently after Austin, the stage production will tour other Texas venues. Still in Texas, on the ABDX list, Kevin Redding found this in the Dallas Business Journal of August 15th. Former DFW radio personalities to join the Hall of Fame. Several who worked at Dallas-Fort Worth stations will be inducted in November, including George Carlin, who was an on-air personality at KXOL Fort Worth in the late 50s, and the late Ken Knox, the on-air personality at KLIF 1190, KBOX 1480, KMEZ, and KCNC in Dallas-Fort Worth beginning in the 1960s. Also, Hugh Lampman, host of the KRLD 1080 Music Till Dawn program in the 60s. He was also on KVIL-FM in the 70s. Wes Wise, newsman at KLIF, KRLD, KVIL, and a former Dallas mayor. Another one, Sam Donaldson, former ABC White House correspondent and this week host, will be inducted. He began his broadcasting career in El Paso. And, best of all, the inductees will receive a wallet-sized membership card and certificate of membership. The banquet takes place November 5th at the Dallas Marriott Quorum, www.texasradiohalloffame.com. On the NRC AM list, Pete Kemp posted this item. The 30th Friends of Old Time Radio Convention takes place at the Holiday Inn North in Newark, New Jersey, October 20th to 23rd. Lots of well-known names there, at least if you go back a few years. I'll just pick a few from the long list. Simon Jones of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Larry Storch of F-Troop, Fred Foy, announcer, including The Lone Ranger, Bill Owen, announcer for ABC, and Soupy Sales, TV personality. We'll include a link for all about it. It starts off as www.lofcom.com. On the ABDX list, Bob Foxworth in Florida writes about the nostalgia of Monday morning maintenance. Remember when most US AM stations had a single main transmitter and ran it all night, 6 days? Monday morning was picked as the off night for maintenance, as it was supposed to have the fewest listeners of any night. In some farm areas, Sunday morning was the silent night, as the early Monday farm news was important, such as WHO 1040 Des Moines. The Sunday morning receptions of KHVH 1040 Honolulu on the East Coast were tales of legend. I think I had them 3 times in New Jersey, and never well enough to report. Once in 1967, I ran a reel of tape all night. The signal faded in just as the tape ran out. The man talking about the Hawaiian Village Hotel. Today, virtually all stations have alternate mains and can take one or the other down for maintenance at will, so that silent periods are reserved for antenna work, which is much less frequent. And the reliability of transmitters is now so much better that a weekly silent period is not needed, nor are the frequency checks. On the NRC AM list, Bob Young says, I would like to have met Marconi. I made the pilgrimage down to the Cape to see the site of the first transcontinental broadcast from the U.S. Mark DeLorenzo at South Dennis, Cape Cod, replies, Bob's referring to Marconi Beach in South Wellfleet, Massachusetts, in the Cape Cod National Seashore. The area is clearly marked with signage on U.S. Route 6. I believe it's at the first traffic light once you enter Wellfleet. An ADXer who visits Massachusetts from another state should definitely make this DX pilgrimage. If you like beach weather, come in the summer. If you want to avoid traffic jams and crowds, come between October 1st and Memorial Day weekend. And Bob Young replies from Millbury, Yes, there's not much left of the site, but you can still feel the aura there. Makes me long for the days of the Spark transmitter. They tore the four towers down sometime during the 20s. Erosion wore away the part where the front two were anyway. There's a model of the tiny station, including the four towers and station itself, under an open-air roof. There are also a couple of cement pylons that were used to anchor the towers, which are still left. There's a little history of the station written there also, a very cool place. I've been there several times. Here's an application for radio Marconi probably would not have conceived of from the CGC communicator via Kevin Redding, ABDX. In Virginia, a startup called StarChase will soon unveil a system aimed at taking some of the danger out of police pursuits by using compressed air to fire an epoxy-coated projectile at a fleeing vehicle, thus attaching a GPS chipset, wireless modem, and power supply to enable continuous remote tracking. Field tests will begin soon, and StarChase intends to officially unveil the system at the September IAPC conference in Miami. We'll include a link to the complete story. On the ABDX list, Paul Crane in Jackson, Michigan posted this item, Where are scanners illegal? In 6 states, Michigan, Indiana, Kentucky, Florida, New York, and Minnesota. Well, they're illegal at least in cars. And, yes, there's a website giving all the information about scanner laws in each state. It starts www.afn.org, and we'll include the complete URL in the summary for this COM 0508 at worldofradio.com. Concerned about power line communications, or BPL, on the Short Waves Yahoo group, Mark Blitz says he moderates a Yahoo group especially about that. Lots of discussion there. It's BPL-go-away Yahoo group. You'll find it if you can search. And another one, which he says involves Ed Hare of ARRL and many others, is titled BPL and Ham Radio, another Yahoo group name. In case you haven't heard, this from the September Medium Wave News in the UK by Steve Witt. The ICOM R75 receiver survives. There have been reports that ICOM decided to continue production of this model for the time being. It seems rumors of its demise are greatly exaggerated. According to both ICOM and Universal websites, it looks like ICOM is still making the R-75, and Universal has removed a message saying that it has been discontinued. We'll include links to these two exact sites. The FM Atlas and Station Directory is a one-of-a-kind publication, put together by Bruce Elving, and we're delighted to hear that the new 20th edition is now available. It went to the printers on August 8th. It's 264 pages, more than the previous edition. The maps have been revised and everything updated. It's been over 2 years, I believe, since the 19th edition. And Bruce says the price is slightly lower. In the U.S., for one copy, it's $22, including shipping. The address is FM Atlas, P.O. Box 336, ESKO, Minnesota, 55733. And in his FM Media newsletter, Bruce Elving writes this, half serious, half zany editorial, based on an old idea whose time may have come. The news about WA2XMN in New Jersey got me thinking, why not bring back the old 42 to 50 megacycle FM band? Armstrong liked it, but I was too young to have paid attention to the arguments for and against relocating FM to 88 to 108. The idea is not to replace the current band, but to add to it in this age when FM real estate is valuable, even in small markets. With the latest testing at Alpine, it was found very little use is made of the old band, or at least around 42.8 megacycles per second. My mother once had the dual-band Zenith FM radio with AM. The bands were labeled FM 100 and FM 45. It received all the new band FM stations, but nothing was heard on 42 to 50, not even the Minnesota State Highway Patrol. Imagine a windfall of 8 megahertz for new FM stations. They could be commercial, non-commercial, or a combination of each. Ownership could be like LPFM, one station to a customer, or they could be in regional or national groups, stereo, mono, SCA, SCMO, in-band, or on-channel digital audio broadcasting, or technologies not yet dreamed of, could all be accommodated. Indeed, like its predecessor, the new band could be designated at least in part for experimenting with new technologies or programming. Let your imagination soar. A new FM band could be a reality. Bring back the old Zenith 2-band FM radio and others like it. Once stations are on the air, manufacturers will make the sets, the public will demand them, and the nation will be better served, says Bruce F. Elving, Ph.D. I, Glenn Hauser, say Continent of Media 0508 now concludes, also known later as World of Radio Extra 62.